I think, and when I do my trainings, by the way, that's the first thing we cover before anything else, before we talk about any strategies or tactics. So first thing is we have to work on ourselves, because if we're not in a good spot, nothing else is going to work. And so my mindset is absolutely massive. And a lot of it comes down really to, you know, people don't see themselves as real estate investors until they've got that first deal and they got that first paycheck.
Welcome to the Three Steps to Thrive podcast, where each show will show you three simple, practical, and actionable steps to improve your life or your business. Now, here's your host, James Lamb. And guess what? That's me.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are. My name is James from Three Steps of Thrive. And I have a very special guest on today. His name is Mike Wolf. Say hello.
Hey, good to see you, James.
Mike Wolf is so famous. You don't even have a company, Mike. I don't know what your company is. We just know you as
Mike Wolf Mastery is my main.
There you go. I mean, he's big enough where he has his name as the first two out of three words there. But anyways, let me tell you a little bit about Mike. Mike has been featured on NBC, Fox, Sirius XM Radio, and in the Globe and Mail, and many, many more stages and media outlets as well. Mike has been, you're a big deal in the real estate investing area, and you've been doing it for over 30 years. And you work both in the US and Canada. Mike is an international speaker, philanthropist, and mentor, and he loves to teach others how to create a lifestyle of freedom for themselves so they can have more time to do the things they love. Now, when Mike's not helping others invest, he loves to create memories with his two grandsons, travel the world, and do charitable projects. I think the first question is, listeners, I don't know when you're listening to this, but we're recording this end of June 2020. We're stuck in COVID, and I'm pretty sure Mike is you know, you're losing your hair there, my friend, not being able to travel. Where's your favorite place to travel?
Oh, boy. You know, I have so many favorites because it really just depends on what I want to do, but I'll list some of them. So Costa Rica, no-brainer, amazing people, very friendly, very diverse. Everything from like rainforest to beaches to volcanoes. Thailand, also probably the happiest people on the planet. They're always smiling. And what's amazing to me, especially first time I went there, is a lot of the people there live paycheck to paycheck. They're always smiling and they will give you the shirt off their back to help you. So I love it, but also gorgeous country. Bali, just magical place, spiritual.
I think everything's warmer than Calgary, isn't it? Wherever you go, it's always. So when you say you're getting away from the cold, you're literally telling the truth. Unless you go to Antarctica, I don't know if you've hit all of the continents or not yet.
That's the one continent I haven't been to yet, and actually, I want to do that once, just so I can say I did. But I normally don't go to cold places, but that will be the exception.
That is fair. Question for you: when you go to the places, and you mentioned Thailand and Bali as two of them. When you do that, do you go to a lot of the same places that you visited before because you know you like it? Or do you, even within the same country, visit new areas?
Yeah, kind of a combination. Like the first time I go to a country, usually I do the touristy things, the things that are kind of what most people go to that country for. As I get to know the country, if I fall in love with it, especially if I let, you know, the people and the vibe, quite often I go back. So for instance, Costa Rica, I've been to probably a dozen times. And some of the trips have just been, I like to do a lot of philanthropy. So I've gone there and gone to, you know, to this one specific place where there's this orphanage where I like to go and hang out with the kids and bring them gifts and play with them. So sometimes I go back for different reasons. So sometimes it's touristy. Sometimes, you know, I go to Italy a lot because I love the food. Sometimes I just kind of immerse myself in the culture. Usually the first time is always touristy things. Then the second time is usually more trying to blend in with the culture, or maybe I have some sort of project I want to, you know, some sort of give back project. So every country is different. And, but I also like to explore new places. I want to cover every country before I leave this planet. So,
yeah. That's pretty cool, hey? You mentioned philanthropy. I think you mentioned it three times in the last minute. That's an important part of what you do, yes?
Absolutely. You know, when I was younger, and this will be one of my tips later, but, you know, when I was younger you know, everything was based around money, and I was a workaholic, and I worked my butt off, and I did exactly what, you know, I was, what society told me I'm supposed to do, you know, work hard and you'll get ahead. So I worked really hard to the point where my daughter, who's now 25, when she was growing up, a lot of times I was definitely not there as much as I should have been. And, but what I've learned over the years is, instead of working hard, things I'm teaching my grandkids and my daughter are work smart. Don't work hard, work smart, and use leverage and make your time count. Do little things to make big things happen. And so, you know, now I've got two grandsons, they're 2 and 4, and exact opposite, you know, where I make as much time as I can to create memories. And so to me, giving back and doing, you know, philanthropy you know, volunteering, things like that, really help with fulfillment and happiness. And so I changed my currency back. If we would have had this interview 15 years ago, all would have been money. I can show you how to make more money, more money, more money. Mm. Now I want to teach you how to make money come in on autopilot passively, so you don't even have to think about money. So you can go focus on the things that are important, like, you know, working on things that make you happy and fulfilled. And I find the most fulfilling thing is to help other people. So,
well, it's interesting, right? Because money is a big part of this. And let's just have this discussion right out. I know in the, and you know, we call it, some people call it NGOs, the charitable world. Money and profit is kind of a dirty word. I don't know how to say it otherwise, but it's kind of unfortunate, because you are able to do the things you do because you were successful, period. Right. I know there's a little bit about giving back, and I know there's giving about time, but all of a sudden, because you have the finances to do things, you can make massive change. Tell me about the importance of money versus time. I know time is well intentioned. Is money better?
They're both important, but you know, it's really a mindset thing. A lot of people think that money is dirty, and you know, in the media, usually rich people are portrayed as being stingy. They're the Grinch, and they're the, you know, they're always the villain. They're always a bad guy. And then it's the poor regular person on the street who, you know, just can't seem to get by because there's a scarcity of money. It's all being held by this one person or group of people. And, you know, nothing could be further from the truth, because a lot of my friends and a lot of my clients, I've helped them create wealth. And, a lot of the most giving people I know are people with money, because there's a lot. I meet a lot of very heart-centered people that are broke, and they will give you the shirt off their back, and they like to give, but you can only give so much. You're very limited. If you want to scale your giving, you've also got to work on yourself first. And one of the first things you have to do is get over that mindset of money, that money is bad, and all the stuff that was driven into our heads, especially when we're young, and money doesn't grow on trees, and all that stuff. Money is extremely important, but when it's, I like to compare it to oxygen. So, you know, I'll never say, hey, I hope James isn't breathing too much, because, you know, I hope there's enough oxygen for me. We never think that way, but we don't measure how many breaths we take. We don't think about it. We don't care about it, because it's so abundant that we don't have to worry. So when you can make money the same, where it comes in on autopilot, and that's where we get into this topic of passive income, where you do something once, you get paid for it over and over and over again. When you have that happening and the money comes in effortlessly, then you don't even think about it anymore. I never think about money. I very rarely do I think about money anymore. Not because it's not important, because I've mastered it, and now I know it's abundant. And now instead I focus on, like I said, you know, what's going to make me happy when I wake up in the morning, what's going to make me happy today, and how can I help somebody else? How can I create fulfillment? How can I bring other people up with me? And, you know, when you change your focus like that, I find, and I'm not very religious, but I'm spiritual. So I like to use the word universe. You can substitute that for God or whatever that word is for you. But I just find when you're on the right path, it's almost like you can do no wrong, and things just magically just fall into place, and you get in the flow, and stuff happens like without even trying. And it's ironically, when you're broke and you're trying to make stuff happen, it seems like nothing falls into place. But I find that once you get on the right path, and this is all learnable, by the way, and a lot of it's mindset. But once you get on the right path, it's almost impossible to, I don't know, you can't really turn it off. Just you get in the flow and things just magically keep happening for you. And so,
yeah. And I want to chat about that in a second. I'm just curious, because, you know, now, you know, I mean, how many people can say they've mastered money? You know, I mean, it literally is, I don't even think it's 1% of the population. You know, we talk about the 1 or 2%, but I think it's less than that. So now that you've mastered money, now that you do philanthropy, how much of this is driven by legacy? Is legacy a big thing to leave to, your kids or your grandkids or developing world? Where does that sit in?
Well, as you know, I'm a real estate investor. And the great thing about real estate is if you do it properly, you can actually, you know, create intergenerational wealth. And so my real estate, I have a lot of properties that at the end of the month, they obviously generate a rent check. And I have other people that go and deal with that. I have other people that collect the rent and deal with the tenants. So a lot of times when you leave something to somebody else and they inherit it, quite often, even though in your mind it was an asset, quite often you're leaving them a liability. So for example, if you leave your business to your kids and they don't know anything about your business, they're probably not intentionally, but they'll probably run into the ground because they just don't know how to deal with it. And so with my real estate, for example, when that goes to my daughter, she's not going to have to worry about, oh, I don't know anything about real estate. There's going to be a team that's attached to that. And so one of the important things that people should look at is building teams, putting systems in place so that things run without you. So if you're leaving your business and your stuff to somebody else, it runs on its own. So imagine, you know, let's say you're the CEO, or let's say you're the owner of Walmart. And, you know, if I inherited Walmart, I wouldn't have a clue how to run it. I'd run that into the ground. But because they've got teams, they've got systems in place, it would run itself. It wouldn't be a hindrance. So you want to do the same when you leave your business or you leave your assets to your kids or your grandkids. You want to make sure that it's not a liability to them, because otherwise they will, all that stuff that you spent so much time building is going to get, you know, it's going to be gone. And so when we talk about legacy, that's the first thing that comes to my mind is leaving, making sure that your assets, what's an asset to you is an asset to the person who inherits that.
Yeah, no, it's a really, really good point, right? Because a lot of times we leave a business thinking it's going to be a family legacy, and you know it just ends up being run to the ground, right? And people feel bad all over the place, right? The person who created it feels terrible. The person who ran it to the ground feels terrible. It's not a, as you say, it's a liability, not an asset. Let me ask you this. So you've been successful in how many, and I know you told me in confidence, and you can share or you don't have to share, how many houses do you own?
We've got, quite a lot.
Yeah. And we're not talking like a dozen, right? We're talking like kind of 10 or 20 fold that, right? Which is great.
Yeah. One of the things I'd recommend, by the way, is when, you know, as you accumulate assets, you don't really want to let people know what you have for assets, because that makes you a target. So one of the things that I actually teach my students is about asset protection. And one of the best ways to protect yourself is to not let everybody know what you have. And so that's why I don't really share that. Not because I'm trying to be non-transparent and I'll share just about everything, but it's actually incongruent with what I teach. So I have to set a good example.
That's fair.
I have real estate that I don't really, I have enough income coming in from my properties that I can have a pretty good lifestyle for that.
Yep. No, that's fantastic. Let me ask you this. So your product is real estate investing, but your passion is more teaching this. Is that what I'm sensing out of this?
It's both. I mean, I'm pretty fortunate because not only do I have, you know, the real estate, but I also have the teams. And so a lot of the stuff that I do is very passive now. Like the money comes in without me having to do anything to get it. And so there's basically three types of people out there. In the real estate space, you have to be really, really careful, because a lot of people like to dangle that carrot, get rich quick stuff over your head, and they lure students in who spend a lot of money who don't really get a result. So there's really three types of people. There's very, very successful real estate investors. You're never going to hear their name. They're not teaching anything. They're making more than enough money doing real estate. They don't need to teach anything. They're fine. And, you know, that's how I used to be. I used to be a workaholic, but I made a lot of money and I didn't really need to teach it. Then I got smart and, put teams in place and built systems. That took a while, but once I did, then I got my time back. And so my passion became, I always have people coming up to me, Mike, how did you do that? How do I duplicate that? But anyway, so the first type of person is a person who's actually doing it. They're very successful at it. They don't have teaching, is that would actually be a cut and pay for them. No matter what they charge, they'd actually make more money doing the real estate. Then you get the second type, and these are people that probably don't really do a whole lot of real estate. Maybe they do no real estate, but they're really good at marketing and they're really good at dangling that carrot and getting people in a seminar room. And they might take some famous face off like some real estate flipping program and use that as the face of it. But behind it, there's not a whole lot of substance. So these people make money training. They don't make any money in real estate. They make all their money on trainings. And I hate to say bad things about other people in the industry, but most of the time, those students end up coming to me, and I wish they came to me first, because they're, you know, $30,000 to $100,000 broker, and they could have bought a property instead of getting really bad education. And then there's a third type, and these are people that actually have a passion for, okay, we've made it. We figure out how to do this. In my case, I built the teams around it. So it doesn't really take up my time. And I actually get a really big, one of my favorite things is when I'm on the stage and I can see light bulbs going off in people's heads as I say something. That really lights me up. And so I actually really like teaching, but when my daughter got pregnant, I have two grandsons, as I mentioned. When she got pregnant with the first one, Asher, I actually stopped doing all my training. So I thought, you know what? That's the only thing that takes up my time is, you know, besides my philanthropy, the only thing that takes up my time is the teaching. And so I thought, I'm going to take that off my plate so that I can be there for my daughter in case, you know, things don't go smoothly or if she needs me for moral support, whatever it is, I want to be there for. So I actually stopped training. And then probably 2 years after that, one of my students who took one of my, he took a tax deeds class. For those who don't know what tax deeds are, basically if people don't pay their property taxes, eventually their homes will go up on the auction block. Anyway, so one of my star students picked up a single family home in Houston, Texas for $7,200. And he shot a video, you know, he was super excited, of course. And he said, I want to give a big shout out to my mentor, Mike Wolf, for teaching me how to do this. And the next day I had all these people, strangers emailing me, texting me, calling me, saying, when's your next training? When's your next training? And so I decided, you know what, I'll do one more training, because he basically sold it out for me without me having to market it at all.
Yeah.
And when I did that training for the first time in 2 years, I realized how much I missed it. Like, I absolutely love it. So these days I train, but I usually do like maybe one or two trainings a year. That's it. Cause I really want to protect my time for my daughter and for my volunteering and the other things that light me up and my travel, being a nomad. So I'm really protective of my time. But here we are in lockdown times. And I decided, you know what, now is the time, since I can't do all my travel and I can't do all the stuff that I'm normally doing. I decided that I'm going to, you know, do some online trainings, because I'm seeing so many people right now that are just struggling with money, and they're getting laid off from their jobs. And they're, you know, what I see coming down the pipeline is probably the greatest transfer of wealth in history. And so there's going to be a whole lot of people, unfortunately, going into foreclosure. And so my mission for this year is to train as many people as possible to ethically invest in real estate and create win-wins with the people that are in trouble. And so I'm going to show them exactly how to do that and how to, you know, basically monetize it, but you're going to leave something on the table for the person on the other end of that transaction. And so that's my mission for this year, is I want to get as many people trained as possible. So here I am, full speed ahead teaching this year. But next year, hopefully, I mean, if obviously COVID's a little unpredictable, but assuming things get semi-normal, you know, then I plan to go back to my previously scheduled life, but have kind of an army of ethical investors out there that are helping people. And that's my goal for this year.
Yeah. No, that's super cool. You know, and just so our listeners, and I know you spoke a little bit about it, and I'm going to use layman terms, because a lot of, you know, you speak very quickly, first of all. But what you were saying is basically, if someone gets in trouble with the banks, if someone can't pay their mortgage, you have ways to help bail them out and give them a parachute. Are they going to lose the house? Yes. But there's softer ways of losing the house than losing all the equity in the house than just being kicked out on the street, right? So,
sometimes you actually can save them from losing their house. So, I'm just going to, I don't know if you want me to go into a little detail or not, but I certainly can, or you can.
Sure. Why not? I'll give you 1 minute. I know you have three options. I think it was three options, right? Do you want to give that a go?
Yeah. So basically, I used to have a company called Foreclosure Fixers, which, I had back back during the last recession. And there's two types of people that get into trouble. And so first of all, my marketing would say, I can help you stop the foreclosure. So it wasn't, I'm going to take your house from you. Everybody gets those postcards in the mail. We buy homes. We'll pay cash for your home. We buy ugly homes. People are desensitized to that. And they know the people sending it are vultures. So I went at a very different angle. We can help stop the foreclosure. And so two different types of people would call me on my marketing. So sometimes bad things happen to good people. And right now during COVID, a lot of good people are, of course, being affected, and they're losing their jobs, and they would love to make their mortgage payments. Not that they're irresponsible with money. If you lose your job, what do you do? And so lots of those types of people. And quite often, you know, these people might lose their jobs now, but once things get more normal, they'll go find another job. And a lot of these people will be able to make their payments. They just can't afford that lump sum that they got behind. And so I would actually become a lender. I loan them the money that they were in arrears, and I actually keep them in their house. And they would, of course, pay back with interest, but it was a win-win because they didn't lose their home. There's type two person who always lives beyond their means, and they have a way bigger house than what they can afford. And They have all the toys. I used to always joke when I used to go collect my own rent. My tenants would always have way better television than me, sometimes a nicer car than me, better stereo, but I always had a better book collection. But anyway, those people tend to live beyond their means. And for those people, I like to give them what I call a soft landing, meaning that a lot of these people have no equity. When the bank is done with them, they're going to be literally on the streets, possibly homeless, unless they've got a relative to move in with or a friend. And so I would always make sure that they had enough money for a damage deposit and several months rent and food money. And I could easily go in and give them like almost like pretty much nothing if I wanted. But I wouldn't do that. I would actually leave something on the table for them. And you know, if somebody's losing their job, they probably work with 10 other people that are losing their job. And so guess what? I made a little bit less on the deal, but they send me their 10 friends that were in the same boat as them. And so that's the stuff I like to teach people is how do you help these people so that, you know, you're not getting the home run on the deal. Maybe you're only getting to third base, but you have 10 other people that are also going to third base. You're helping more people. You're making more money, win-win. And so in a nutshell, that's a very abbreviated version of, you know, some of the things that you can do with real estate. And by the way, you don't even have to have any money, and that's a whole other topic. But I started out in real estate with less than zero. So back in 30 years ago.
Well, this is the interesting part, right? And look, like, don't get me wrong. Everything is interesting, but why, when we're starting in real estate, okay, let me paint this picture, okay? So let's just assume, and I'm not saying you do, I'm not saying you don't, but let's say you have 100 houses that are paid for. And each of those 100 houses generate some type of cash flow. And then you can actually, if you wanted to, leverage off that cash flow and get more assets. And then those assets are paid by the renters. That's essentially the process of real estate investing in the long term. Why is it so difficult? Where do we get hung up? Why, if it's this easy, and let me put it this way, it's not easy, and I'm going to tell you that right now, because people have tried it and they've failed left, right, and center. There are horror stories all over the place. Why can't we do this, Mike? Why, after so many years of education, you know, no one teaches you investment, but why do we go to stock markets to put our fate into someone else's hands as opposed to doing it for ourselves like you have done for yourself?
Yeah, well, it's like anything else. It really comes down to getting the proper education. You know, none of this is taught in schools. Money isn't taught in schools. And, you know, financial literacy definitely needs to be taught in schools, but it's not. And so, you know, really it comes down to getting the right education. It's just like, you know, anything is easy to somebody who's become an expert at it. Somebody like myself, I had to, you know, I started at 24 years old. I'm 54 now. And when I started, I didn't have any education on how to do it. And I just got really lucky on my very first deal, fortunately. After that, I managed to lose almost all of it because I, you know, you can't duplicate luck. And so most people who don't have some sort of education on how to do this and a good strategy on how to do it, even if they get lucky on their first deal, they tend to lose their money early on in the game, and then they're knocked out of it and they it leaves a bad taste in their mouth. So you need to really get educated on how to do it properly. And it's very easy. Like I said, you know, when I go to these tax deed auctions that I was talking about earlier, I see a lot of times I'll see people there, they're just winging it. They've never done it before. There's actually an article in the newspaper, maybe 6, 7, 8 months ago. This person went to an auction in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and thought he had won this really nice villa that was worth probably a little bit over $200,000. He got it for $9,000. He thought he hit a home run until he found out that, you know, he bought this 100-foot strip of land by 1 foot wide that separates two villas. That's what he got. And had he been educated, he would have known that's what he was bidding on, but he didn't. And he tried to, he got really mad and said, how dare the county do this to me? And I was ripped off. No, it's like the first thing it says is that, you know, it's up to you to do your due diligence. And so the biggest problem is most people don't know what that due diligence is. They don't know what they don't know. And so it's very important to get a good education on anything that you're going to do, not just real estate, but whatever it is that lights you up, whatever it is you want to be an expert at, you've got to get the training. And so that's really where the challenge is. Who teaches you how to do the strategy? Like, if you want to go to a tax deed auction, where do you learn how to do that? There's not a whole lot of people teaching it, because most of the people are successful at it don't want to share it because, you know, they have a scarcity mindset. Yeah. So that's the challenge for not just that strategy, but any strategy, is that most people try to wing it without the education, and they end up getting a much more expensive education by trial and error.
Well, that's interesting, right? Let's say a real estate investment course, I'm just spitballing here, is between $5,000 and $10,000. I think that's probably quite reasonable and probably in the ballpark there, right? And yet people tend to just on a whim, they watch House Flippers and then they sign up, they put 20 grand down and then they just assume they have the skills to do this when most of the people have never done this before, right? And somehow, you know, reality TV kind of sets them up for winning or failure or whatever you want to call it, right?
Yeah, well, I used to do a lot of, you know, my first U.S. market back in the day was in Las Vegas, and there used to be a show, I think it was called Flipping Vegas. I don't watch TV, but one of my students called me up and they said, man, I mean, they described this deal that was done on the TV show. And so I actually was kind of curious. I got my team to actually pull title, and we actually looked into the deal that they claimed they did because it was extremely lucrative on TV. And when we looked at the real numbers, they probably lost money on that deal. But on TV, they made it look like they made, you know, they got a home run. And so you have to be very, very careful what you believe is real out there. And you can get home runs, absolutely. But most people don't last in the business long enough to get to that home run. So your first deal might be like a single base hit. Maybe on your first deal, you make $5,000 or $10,000 or $20,000 if you're really lucky. But if you stay in the game long enough, I've had paychecks that, you know, were bigger than I used to make an entire year of going to a 9-to-5 job. And so, but you have to stay in the game long enough because your first deal probably won't be, because you're getting used to, you know, working with teams you know, you just like anything else, you get better with it over time. And so a lot of people, they fall for the marketing of some of these companies that are, you know, everything's get rich quick and they're going to, you know, take a 3-day course. The next day they're going to go do their $1 million deal and retire. Like that's not reality. And so you have to be really careful where you get your information from, who you're dealing with, the experience of the people actually training it. Are they really good at marketers and they know how to get you excited about it, but they don't really know how to teach you how to do the actual strategy? Or are they people that are actually on the front lines that do this stuff? And, you know, so you have to be really careful where you do get that education. And that's really the key.
If you're a listener, Mike, how would you tell? How would you even, I know your program is coming up, but let's say it's 2021 and you're off somewhere gallivanting around the world and they're like, I really want to get onto this, but I have no idea who to trust.
Right. Well, first of all, that's why I'm going to be recording everything. So it's eventually going to be an online course. But besides that, you know, really, I mean, we live in the best time ever for information. I mean, go on Google, research these companies. You know, I see a lot of people, they're given a lot of scarcity. They're sitting inside a fancy seminar room at a beautiful hotel, the big chandelier. It's very easy to get caught up in the excitement and the hype that they're putting at you. And you know, you got your little phone on you. I'd be really quickly Googling, what are the reviews on that program? And there's a lot, you know, the one of the challenges, a lot of these companies, you know, they'll go across Canada and the United States and take a lot of people's money. And then they get a bad reputation. Then the next year they come back with a whole different name. So they shed their old reputation. My company's called Mike Wolf Mastery. It has my name on it. I'm not changing my name. And that's because I'm very proud of what I teach. So find other people that, if they're a brand new company and the year before they were a different company, the year before that, they were a different company. I can think of, I won't mention any names. I can think of several of those offhand. If they keep changing their name, there's usually a reason for that. And it's not usually a good one. So, but those are the things you want to look at. And like I said, we got Google. So Google, you can find out what other people are saying about it, find out other reviews. And don't get caught up in the hype that, oh, if you don't sign up right now, you'll never get this opportunity again. Cause it's all, yes.
Well, one of the neat things about what you do, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I might be wrong here, but you teach people how to invest even if they don't have a large chunk of cash at the moment, right? So you do a lot of community investments, for lack of a better term. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, it's not so much even community investment. It's just, you know, when I started, I had a bunch of student loans. I was actually going to be a lawyer and I had my first degree and I thought before I get my second degree, I want to get these paid off. And so I actually got a job at the phone company and, you know, anyway, I won't tell you the whole story because I will say that when I bought my first piece of property, I was $25,000 in student loan debt and I had very little assets. Now, if I had known then what I know now, like I said, one of my students picked up a property for $7,200, single family home worth probably $100,000, let's say. And that wasn't even his $7,200. I taught him, how do you go and get other people to invest in what you're doing? And so that's some of the stuff that I teach. You know, how do you find other people to invest in your projects? But there's a whole bunch of strategies that require zero. There's something called wholesaling. Wholesaling, what that is, You go and you find a good deal, which I teach my students how to do. You put it under contract, but you're not going to buy that property. You're going to do what's called assign that contract. So imagine, James, imagine you found a property worth $200,000 and the owner was willing to sell it for $100,000. And a lot of times people will sell it way below market value if you can take the problem off their hands and make things happen. If you can close on it right away and just... they're under a lot of stress. So, but let's say you found that, but you don't have $100,000. You know, it's a smoking deal. You don't have the cash. Well, you've got a few different options. One is you wholesale. Like I said, you put it under contract. You call me and say, "Hey, Mike, I've got this deal. It should make $100,000. Here's why I think that. Here's my research. If you're willing to give me $20,000, I'll sign this deal to you. And then if I say yes, I cut you a $20,000 check. You go find the next deal. You make money whether I make money on that deal or not. If I lose money, you still got to keep that $20,000. So, yeah. But a second strategy is you could say, "Hey, Mike, I've got the smoking deal, $100,000 profit in it. Do you want to be my money partner on it?" And now what you're asking is, "Hey, Mike, will you put up the $100,000? I did the work to find this deal. Let's do this deal together, but you're putting up the money and then let's split the profits." So now you went from making $20,000. Now if you're splitting it, now you're making $50,000. That's number two. Number three is you can find what's called a hard money lender. Hard money lenders don't typically care that much about your credit. They don't really care much about you. They will charge high interest rates and they care about the deal. And if they can see that there's $100,000 profit in that deal, sometimes, not always, but sometimes they'll actually loan you 100% of the value of that property. So now you go flip it. Maybe you have to pay, you know, to borrow that money for however long, let's say $5,000, $10,000. Well, now you just made, you know, $90,000 or $95,000, doing the exact same, pretty much the same work, finding that deal. So it all comes down to one, finding a motivated seller, and then two, figuring out your exit strategy. How are you going to deal with that? Are you going to sell it to somebody else? Are you going to team up with somebody else? Or are you going to get somebody to loan you the money and then you go do the deal all on your own? And three different outcomes. Some are less risk than others, but all of them requiring zero of your own money, just your time.
Yeah. Awesome.
I the iceberg, so.
That's fair. I do want to get to how people can reach you or learn more, but let me ask you this question about your class or what you teach. Is there a component you talked about mindset way at the very beginning of this podcast? Do you teach that mindset, and how important is it that people start believing in themselves to find these deals?
That is huge. And I think, and when I do my trainings, by the way, that's the first thing we cover before anything else, before we talk about any strategies or tactics. So first thing is we have to work on ourselves, because if we're not in a good spot, nothing else is going to work. And so my mindset is absolutely massive. And a lot of it comes down really to, you know, people don't see themselves as real estate investors until they've got that first deal and they got that first paycheck. They think, "Oh, it's not going to work for me." Or, "Of course it works for Mike," because they think I came out of the womb with all these special skill sets, which I wish. I was like the most I was probably the least likely person to ever succeed at real estate investing. I started off with no money. I was very, very shy when I was younger. And I didn't know anything about it. It wasn't even my passion. I just stumbled on it by mistake, got a really nice first paycheck, and then managed to lose most of it on the next deal. But that's another story. And then decided I'm going to learn how to do this properly. And here we are 30 years later. But I was not the most likely candidate to succeed at real estate investing. I certainly wasn't born with any skills that other people don't have. But the one thing I do have is I spent a lot of time doing personal development, working on myself, changing my, you know, how I see money. I don't see it as dirty. I see it as an amazing tool to use to help other people. And so, yeah, we spent a lot of time on mindset to answer your question.
Awesome. Okay. Before, just one more question before we get to how people can contact you. You were supposed to be a lawyer, right? I think your family wanted you to be a lawyer. Are they thrilled you never became a lawyer?
You know what? That was actually my mother's dream for me. And she, you know, middle of grade 12, I had no idea what I wanted to be. And so she always said, doctor, lawyer. That was all that was going through my head, doctor, lawyer. And I'm terrified of blood. So doctor was off the table. So by default, I picked law. But, you know, I got a job at the phone company, as I mentioned, to try to pay off those loans. And while I was there, I bought my first home to live in. And then my mortgage broker called me up and said, hey, if you want, I can get you another mortgage. I mean, your credit's really good and you're making good money if you want it, you know. And I have to be creative because, like I said, I had no down payment, but we did. And I bought my second property and then it just happened to take off. And that was the first time when I got that paycheck, that was the first time ever in my life that I knew what I wanted to do and I had a passion for something. Law wasn't really my passion. That was my parents' dream for me. But to answer your question, my mother's still, like, to this day, it's like, all right, you can still go to law school. It's not too late. She knows what I do, but that's all right. That was definitely her dream for me. And it's one of the things I like to, tell people is live your own dreams. Don't live somebody else's dream for you. Live your own dreams.
Yeah, that's really important, isn't it? Right. And this is sort of whether you're corporate on a job or an entrepreneur, this is like the first step towards that freedom, right? That freedom of choice and that financial freedom that you speak about. Tell us a little, who would be a good fit and how to contact you, Mike.
I think everybody's a good fit, to be honest with you, but especially, you know, people right now, you know, if you're watching during, COVID times, this is, you know, a lot of people are, the key word this year is pivot. A lot of people are switching careers. They're underemployed or not employed at all, unfortunately, right now. So anybody who's had any, inkling to be an entrepreneur, be their own boss, I promise anybody could do this. I think everybody should invest in real estate. Not everybody should be on the front lines. Not everybody should be taking training from me. Some people, if you're a doctor, lawyer, engineer, and that's your passion, and you're employed right now and things are good, you need to own real estate, basically bring down your taxable income. And that's a whole other conversation. Also to get cash flow and passive income so that if you decide that you don't want to be a doctor anymore, or if you get sick yourself, you still have money coming in. So for those people, I actually have turnkey properties where you buy the property, my team looks after it, money shows up in your bank account at the end of the month. You don't need to learn how to do this stuff. But for people that are maybe looking to change career or add another revenue stream, this stuff none of this is rocket science, I promise you. And so what I've actually done is, like I said, this year is my year to get people out there that are interested and create a movement of ethical investors that are going to go help people and make money doing it. And so I'm actually doing a 3-day training. If you're watching before August 14th, 15th, and 16th, 2020, I've got a 3-day event coming up and it's $97, $97 for 3 days. And I'm bringing in some of my, some other experts in the industry that are teaching exactly what they're doing right now. And basically, this course is all about the strategies that work right now during COVID times and that you can do even if you're hunkered down, and also the stuff that's going to happen once things open up a little bit. And we're probably going to experience the greatest transfer of wealth in history. How do you take advantage of that and be on the right side of that equation, the person moving up the ladder, not the person moving down? How do you do that? And so it's 3 days. If you're interested, I don't have the link handy, but you can email me info@MikeWolfMastery.com. And it's Wolf just like the animal, info@MikeWolfMastery. And I will get, and say that you saw me on James's program, you get the $97 for 3 days. And if you're worried, I'll give you a money back guarantee. If you didn't think it was the best training you've ever had, just ask for money back and I'll cheerfully refund it to you. But
correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, that's like a smoking good deal for 3 days of knowledge that could, and I'm not saying this because I have an affiliate code. I'm just saying this because it's a smoking good deal, like $97 of training that could change your life. And if you don't like you get your money back.
Exactly. So watch it. If you hate it, if you think I'm a shark, whatever, you don't even have to tell me why. Just say, Mike, I want my $97 back. I will cheerfully refund it. But, you know, really this is more about mission than money. This $97 isn't going to change my life. But if you pay it, you know, this is another piece of mindset. When you get something for free, you don't put value on it. You probably won't show up. You probably never use it. Having even a little bit of skin in the game now makes you at least, it gets you a little bit, at least a micro commitment from you. So I know hopefully you're going to show up and hopefully you're going to apply it. But I'm making it risk-free. So that $97 is, if you're worried about the $97, it's not at risk. So you can have it back. But normally, James, when I do my programs, I usually start to work with me, at live events, I usually charge like $8K and up. That's where it starts. But this year, like I said, my mission is really to get as many, there's just so many people in trouble right now. And this is a year that I'm actually, settle down in one, well, maybe not the whole year, but at least for now I'm settled down in one place and I have the time to create this and do this. And I want to change as many lives as possible so that creates a ripple effect. So the people's lives who I change, they'll go and help other people and change their lives, and it trickles down. And so that's the goal. So that's why I'm doing it. And that's why it's so inexpensive. But I want people to have at least a little bit of commitment. And, you know, I just hope you show up and I hope you apply it. And I know it'll change your life. And it's going to be, you know, I'm going to be there. We're going to be doing Q&A. I'm going to have some of my best friends who are very successful real estate investors. None of this is fluff, by the way. None of it is, stuff that used to work back in 1984, which a lot of times I go to other people's trainings and I hear them teaching the history, in my opinion, a history course. This is stuff that works right now during these chaotic times and with what's, you know, going on in the economy.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess there's a real opportunity here with COVID. And I'm reading between the lines here a little bit, because I know, you know, and you care for people. So you're saying there are a lot of people who are in trouble, which there are and there will be. Right. But you're also saying that for the savvy person, there's an opportunity and you're not making money off other people. You're helping them out at the same time as getting your money to work for you. Right. It's interesting because there's also.
Yeah. If you don't mind me interrupting, just part of mindset that's really important. And so I just want to put it in there because this is a perfect segue is that, you know, money is kind of, once again, I'm going to use oxygen again. It's something that you take in and then you put it back out. Then you take it in. And so there's got to be a trade. When it goes back and forth like that, it creates kind of a cycle. And, so I find the happiest people are the people that they make good money and they invest money in things. And then it comes back and then it goes back out and it keeps circulating. People that tend to hoard money don't tend to be very happy, even though they have a lot of money, they have a scarcity mindset still. And then there's other people that they're afraid to ask for money and they're afraid to make money. But they always want to just help people and they become martyrs. And so it's really important that, yes, create a win-win, but part of the win-win is you. You've got to win too. Not you're going to help somebody, but you got to get paid for that. And so you don't have to feel bad or ashamed or so I just wanted to put that out there because it's such an important concept.
Yeah. And it's a good point, right? I mean, there's so many, but there's also good opportunity. And I'm just going to lay it on the table. There's going to be a lot of foreclosures. Government, you know, loans are going to be cheap to acquire, right? Over the next little while, government's printing money like crazy, as you can imagine. And they say a lot of millennials don't want to buy property. As a real estate landlord, that is an amazing opportunity because just like COVID, you want to be on the right side of history. Just like being a landlord, you want to be the renter or you want to be the landlord and hold many properties. I know the answer to that question. I know Mike knows the answer to that question. No, you know the answer. So figure it out. Okay. Awesome. Mike, it's been good having you on the show. Let me, I'm going to put how people can contact you in the show notes.
Yeah. And actually I forgot you actually have the link for the $97 sign up. So you can just post that too.
I do. Is that 97 USD? Cause that's like 4,000 Canadian.
4 billion Canadian, 97 US. Right. The good news is I'm going to teach you, even if you're Canadian, I'm going to teach you how to do deals in the US from while you're in Canada, because the deals are even more lucrative down there than they are in Canada. Although you can apply this certainly to Canada as well, but I'll teach you how to make US dollars on, you know, US paychecks when you do real estate deals too.
Yeah, so. That's amazing, right? And if you play currency, that's even better if you can nail it, right? So
absolutely.
Opportunity. Okay. Every week, Mike, I'm going to ask you about your three tips, but every week, listeners, as you know, we have we bring on interesting and successful entrepreneurs and Mike Wolf from Mike Wolf Mastery. You definitely qualify for both. And we want you to provide us with three practical, actionable, and simple steps to improve either the business or the business owner. And Mike, the floor is yours.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, besides real estate, I've had a lot of other entrepreneurial ventures over the years. I've had pubs and a tomato sauce company, a furniture company. So I'm going to speak to the entrepreneurs that aren't necessarily real estate investors, but this certainly applies to real estate investors as well. So firstly, you know, a lot of people come to me for all kinds of different businesses and they say, you know, hey, you know, I know this person and he's going to charge me X amount of dollars to help me with my marketing. You know, should I do that, I'm going to have to put on my credit card. I don't have the money. And so first of all, when you're doing business, do the free stuff first. Like we all walk around, for example, we all walk around with these things everywhere we go. Right. And, one of the marketing, my best marketing, some of it comes from YouTube, for example. So I already own the phone. It costs zero to shoot a video with it. I upload it to YouTube. They don't charge me anything to put it up there. And it brings in leads while I'm sleeping. It's very, very passive and it costs nothing. And so a lot of people neglect the free stuff, and they go straight to they think there's some magic bullet they can buy when they're missing out on some of the great things that we have in this day and age and that we already own. Like I said, you already own the phone, so let's have it monetized instead of.
Is that because we don't trust ourselves, Mike? Is that where that comes from?
Well, a lot of people are afraid to. A lot of people are afraid of cameras. I used to be one of them. So get over it. You're missing out on, you know, people are YouTube is owned by Google, and people are going to Google to search for answers to their problems. And you want to be the person who shows up there, because Google owns YouTube. People have videos out there are going to rank higher than people who have information anywhere else. So that's number one. Number two, within that same vein, is things like meetup groups are almost, they're not quite free, but they're almost free. And so for me, I have, real estate investors in clubs in various different cities all across North America. And so whenever I put on an event, or if I'm showing up in that city, I want to speak to a group of people interested in my topic. I just, put on a meetup group for that day, and people are basically raising their hands saying, hey, I want to learn real estate, if they join a real estate investor meetup group. So you can do the same. I think it's like $72 a year, and you get three different groups. So that's just to sum it up, just do the free stuff first before you go because so many businesses go under because they're underfunded. They don't have the money to keep going. And that's because they spent their money on stuff that didn't really move the needle for them. And they missed out on all these, other things that would have got them customers without having to spend the money. So that's number one. Number two, and I talked about it a little bit earlier, protect your time. So as you're building your business, figure out your escape strategy to pull yourself back out of it, or better yet, find people to delegate to as early on as possible. Most of the stuff that I do would not be possible without I have amazing teams. When I was young, I used to be really upset because you go to Home Depot and you buy a hammer. It doesn't come with an instruction manual. I don't know how to work a hammer. I don't know how to work a screwdriver. I am like the most uncoordinated, untalented person ever when it comes to fixing a home. Yet my teams and I, we've fixed thousands of homes because of my teams. And so don't let things like that stop you, because there's other people out there, their passion and the thing that they're good at is the thing that you suck at. And so bring these people on your team, make them either partners or employees or whatever, but get the right people on your team that can do the stuff that you can't do. If you try to, most entrepreneurs, their biggest mistake is they try to do everything, and you become the bottleneck in your business because there's only one of you. And assuming you want to sleep and eat, and maybe your spouse might and your kids might want to see you every now and then, that only leaves you so many hours in a day. And so you've got to start to delegate. So that's number two, is definitely, protect your time. And then I'd say for a lot of people, I mentioned I've had other businesses like the pub and the tomato sauce company, et cetera. None of those were things that I started up. There were other people's failing businesses that I just could see. I could see their blind spots. I saw where they were leaving money on the table. I could see why they weren't successful. And I knew I could go in there with my teams. So I'm not an expert at pubs. I owned a pub. I'm still not an expert at pubs. But I brought in a friend of mine who is an expert at restaurants and pubs. It was his passion. He loves spending his whole day in his restaurant. It doesn't bother him. That's his baby. He doesn't mind spending the whole day there. I can't think of anything worse for me that I would less want to do than spend a whole day in a restaurant or pub, but he loved it. And so I teamed up with him. I saw the opportunity. I called him up, said, hey, listen, I'm willing to put up all the money. If you're willing to spend the time and do the things that are necessary to make this successful, let's do a joint venture. And we owned this place for a year and a half. He didn't have to put a dime in. I didn't put a minute of time in, and we made a lot of money on it. And we sold it a year and a half later.
Awesome.
So, and I'm not an expert at pubs. So you don't have to be the expert at the thing that you want to do, but the whole point is you don't have to necessarily start from scratch. The person who we bought the pub off of, he built it from scratch. He invested a lot of money in it. We came along, bought it for pennies on the dollar, put very little in except for some ideas, and turned it around. So instead of starting from scratch, maybe look for somebody who's already doing something, offer to team up with them, add value to them in some way, or if they're in trouble, maybe buy it and take the failing thing that you can get for that's already semi-established. So that'd be my next one. I could go on. How long do I have? I mean,
you got one more point, right?
Was that two?
That okay. Was two.
I'd say that the third thing is make sure you have the right resources when you get started. So many people, us entrepreneurs, we're dreamers, right? Mm-hmm. We have this dream that if we build it, they will come. But a lot of times we're underfunded when we start and we get in and we, you know, we only have so long to make it work and we're under lots of pressure. So make sure you have the right resources. And it's not always money. Sometimes you have the right money, but you don't have the right skill sets or the right education or the right people. So make sure you go into whatever you're doing with the, you know, the right resources. What, you know, and think about that before you start. It's so easy, like as entrepreneurs, we just want to jump into things. And we're so excited because it's our dream and it's our passion. And we just think it's just going to, we'll figure it out as we go. I'm not a big fan on business plans per se, but at least make sure you have the right resources to get going. And before you start, before you put your money and time and effort into something, at least have a pretty good idea how you're going to get to your first paycheck. And like I said, we're dreamers. A lot of us entrepreneurs, we really can see the big vision. We can say, hey, in 10 years from now, I can see this thing being massive, but we don't know how to get to the next step of the ladder. So know what your next step is before you jump in, and then always look at that next step. Keep that big vision, but always know what your next step is.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of the 3 points, I think maybe all three of them actually, you talk, you know, there's a little nuance in there, and it talks is basically education or resources. You find a resource, and if you don't have that resource, be educated on it, right? And you can do it free, you can do it paid, whatever it is, but figure it out, either hire or do it yourself and just be really educated on it.
Exactly. And then I'm going to give one, can I give a bonus one?
Of course. It's 25% better value now. Good, you're giving a bonus one, right?
Exactly, that's right. I would say, and I'm guilty of this too, don't make assumptions, test everything. So for example, I did my first online 3-day event a little bit over a month ago. And a friend of mine who actually wanted to learn real estate investing, she actually said, Mike, you need to do a 3-day event because she has a following. She says, my people want to learn real estate. She teaches finance, but not real estate. She said, my people really want to learn. Can you do an event for them? And I thought, man, I don't know if I want to, like, online event, are people going to actually tune in? Is it going to work? I had all these doubts and I didn't think it was, you know, I'm used to doing live events and I really feed off the energy of my audience. And that over Zoom, is that like, I don't know. But anyway, so I did it because she brought people to me and she wanted me to teach them. So I thought, well, if I'm teaching them, I might as well invite some of the people that are, you know, on my email list, some of my friends, and get them to attend as well. And, you know, my assumption was it wasn't going to work well. People would tune in. They might tune in for a few minutes and tune out. We had the same number of people pretty consistently through the whole 3 days. We changed a whole bunch of people's lives. And I was ready. I wasn't even going to do it. I was opposed to it. And then after I did, I go, man, I don't even know if I, you know, instead of live events, why don't all my events be online? This is so much easier. And so don't make assumptions, you know, in terms of things like your what you think is going to work and what's not. Just test stuff. If it involves putting money out there, like let's say I'm just going to throw something out there like Facebook ads. Well, test with a small amount of money. Test like three, or if you're going to do an ad, test 3 or 4 different ads, see which one converts the best, and then put more money in the one that works. But don't, a lot of times you make assumptions based on our predisposed, you know, our experiences, and we assume that everybody thinks the same way we do, which they don't. And so test stuff, see if it works, and don't be too quick to turn things down. Cause I think I just changed how I'm going to do my teaching in the future, by something that I was not prepared to do. So that's my other piece of advice.
But that's because you were open to it as well, right? You had assumptions and you didn't, you know, but you were open to it and you allowed yourself to try it out. And that's why it came out well. I'm going to give you, I'm curious, I'm going to give you 1 minute. Tell me about Tomato Sauce Company. Start, finish, what happened, and what you learned about tomato sauce.
Well, I still don't, anybody knows me knows I don't know how to cook. So, but, you know, I used to do, as I mentioned, I've done some money lending. And so somebody came to me one day and said, hey, you know, a friend of mine is really struggling with this tomato sauce company and he needs some money. And so to make a long story short, he had the contract to put, you know, his Blue Label tomato sauce on shelves across a major grocery store chain across Canada. And he had, to me, had done the hard part of the job. I don't know how to do, I know I could Google and figure out how to make a tomato sauce if I really had to. That's not my thing. But I could if I had to. So it's not the tomato sauce. But he was short on money and he was wondering if I would invest with him. And when I looked at his business practices and how it, so when you supply grocery stores with a product, they take the product and they pay you like 90 days later. They don't pay you up front. And so he didn't know how to manage money. And so he would, you know, run his staff like overtime when he had money. As soon as he got paid, he'd run them overtime to get caught up. And then he'd run out of money to lay them all off. And it's like, you can't run a business like that. And so I knew that if I had invested money with him, he would have burnt through it because of his practice. He would have burnt through that money and never been in a position to pay me back. So I basically said, hey, listen, I'm going to take over your company. I'm going to make you the minor partner. I'm going to be the major partner. We're going to rebuild. He had, you know, the company that supplied the tomatoes, he bouncing checks to them. And so I have to rebuild that relationship, pay, you know, get the staff working 40 hours a week, no overtime, no layoffs, just standard. It was really simple, basic business practices and just building, you know, rebuilding relationships to make it work. And so in a very short period of time, by just making some minor shifts, made it very, very successful. Very successful. Made myself a lot of money. Made his. I gave him. You know, sold him back my share of the company, and it was a great win-win. And once again, I to this day don't know how to make tomato sauce, and I don't know how to get my product on the shelf of a major grocery chain across the country.
Well, that's the hardest part there, right? That's the biggest win. That is probably why you invested. I know there's like a family recipe probably somewhere there, and there's the staff you hired, and there's like the canning machine. But the big asset was the agreement with the grocery store. That's
the important point is that I did in my mind, the easy part, but in his mind, he did the easy part. He had the connections to make that happen. So, you know, and that's the importance of bringing on people on your team that can do the stuff that you can't do. Because if you take away that part, if he didn't have that contract, I'd have zero interest in his tomato sauce company. But because he had done the stuff where I could see the how lucrative it could be and would be if it was done properly, it was a no-brainer for me. And so, but I also had to do it properly. If I would have loaned him money, I would have lost my shirt. Because I pivoted, as they like to say these days, that's the other big buzzword. I pivoted a little bit. Instead of loaning him the money, I took control for a short period of time, changed the practices, and made all the difference. And so I took the stuff I'm an expert at, combined it with the stuff he's an expert at, and took a lose-lose, because I couldn't do that on my own, nor could he, obviously. And I took a lose-lose, and by combining forces, turned it into a win-win.
Nice. Nope. Good to hear. That's good to hear. Always good news, right? So we've talked about a lot today. We've talked a lot about investing. We've talked a lot about opportunity, mindset, travel, philanthropy. Final thoughts, Mike.
Final thoughts. Okay, I'm going to go back to mindset for a little bit here because I think it's really important right now during COVID times. So, you know, it's very easy right now to get caught up in the negativity and all the, you know, all this chaos that's going on around us. And I just really encourage people that, you know, maybe you're feeling down, maybe you're feeling depressed, feeling sad, you're feeling worried. That's understandable. But I think if you use this time right now, one of the things that's really important mindset is gratitude. Right now, I am very grateful for this downtime that I wouldn't have chosen for myself. And I mean, I would love to be traveling the world as I usually do and doing my usual things. But the one thing I'm really grateful for is this created kind of this quiet time for me and for a lot of people, where now we have this, you know, normally we're running around and we're busy and doing our thing. And now we've got this downtime, and how you use that downtime is really going to determine what your life looks like, you know, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now. And so I encourage you that it doesn't have to be with me. Whatever it is that you want, you know, now's the time to reinvent yourself. Whatever it is that, you know, you think might be, you know, the James 2.0 or the Mike 2.0, whatever that you want your life to look like 5 years from now, start working towards that. Take this downtime, educate yourself, work on your mindset, work on your skill set, and don't wait to see if your job is still going to be there or if your business is still going to be viable when this all ends. We don't know. So do the stuff learn the stuff that will help you. Turn off the Netflix for a little bit. I'm guilty of that too. I watch a little bit of Netflix at night, but during the day I'm being very, very productive, and I'm working on, you know, creating more stuff to help more people. And so if you use this time wisely, 5 years from now, you might look back and say, COVID was the best thing that ever happened to me. Despite, and I don't want to downplay, there's obviously, you know, people getting sick and people dying, and I don't want to downplay that. But this can be your time to reinvent yourself and create something amazing for yourself. Or 5 years from now, you can look back and say, you know what, I was doing really well, then COVID hit and my life fell apart. And you could be a victim of COVID, or this could be your opportunity to move up. So take this time, use this time wisely, educate yourself, work on yourself, and just go and rock it and be positive because things are going to get better.
Awesome. Good final word. And opportunity. You're absolutely right. All right, team, we're going to wrap it up there. Again, James Lamb with Three Steps to Thrive. Mike, it has been a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Yeah. And team, look, if my personal ask to you is if this is something that's intriguing to you and it should be, is check it out, right? At least check it out. Do yourself a favor and open that door. Just crack it open and take a look and see what you find because you never know what's behind there. And Mike's giving a hell of a good deal here. All right, team, we're going to wrap it up. Again, Three Steps to Thrive. We bring on successful and interesting entrepreneurs every week. Thank you, Mike Wolf, for being here. We always ask them for three practical, actionable, and simple steps at the end to improve yourself or improve your business. I appreciate each and every one of you, team. And same time, same place next week.
Don't forget, if you love this podcast, please leave a review. One of my goals is to support as many entrepreneurs and small business owners as possible with these simple, actionable, and practical tips. My team and I spend countless hours finding great guests who are experts in their field, and these people 100% volunteer to be on this show. And one of the best ways to help other people find this podcast is with your review. So if you would be so kind and subscribe and leave a review, this show can get out to more people and I would be forever grateful. So thank you in advance. Okay guys, thanks so much once more for tuning in. See you next week and have a great few days.